her watch.
I wanted to ask Congressmember Delia Ramirez, if there is a move among Congress members to support Ilhan Omar and object to President Trump's comments, calling a sitting Congress member garbage. I remember when Adelita Grijalva was not seated, Congress members like you, especially Congresswomen, stood up and demanded that she be seated after she was elected. What about with Ilhan Omar now, to say the least, under assault from these extremely inflammatory comments?
Yeah, no, look, a number of us have talked about establishing a resolution that confirms that we stand in solidarity with Ilhan Omar, that we will not allow the president to use his authority to attack her, to put her life in danger, and call her to question a sitting member of Congress from Minnesota because of her hijab, because of where she was born. We know that it is setting dangerous precedent. It may start with Ilhan. Certainly some of us, they have attempted and talked about deporting us, denaturalizing us. I was born in this country, and they still say this. And it's not Donald Trump, just Donald Trump.
We have five seconds.
Donald Trump is using Andy Ogles and others, so it is our responsibility to stand with Ilhan because it's standing with the body and the House of Representatives.
And, of course, he didn't just call Ilhan Omar garbage. He called the whole Somali community in the United States. Congressmember Delia Ramirez, Democratic Congressmember from Illinois, member of the House Homeland Security Committee. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in KBOO this Monday, December 15th at 11 p.m. as Gremlin Time once again presents Catherine Dunn reading the Father Christmas letters.
The interest and importance of Father Christmas extended beyond his filling of their stockings on Christmas Eve, for he wrote a letter to them every year in which he described in words and pictures his house and his friends and the events, hilarious or alarming, at the North Pole.
So tune in KBOO this Monday at 11 p.m. as Catherine Dunn reads the Father Christmas letters by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Are you ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kboo.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, going on now until December 31st. What better way to celebrate than by gifting your loved one a KBOO membership this season?
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from the Bureau of Labor and Industries Child Care for Construction in partnership with Business Oregon, working to support those caring for children of journey workers in Oregon, even family and friends. More info at oregon.gov/BOLI/apprenticeship under the link Financial Assistance for Registered Apprentices.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, thousands of Northwest Washington residents have been told to evacuate from flood warnings.
Eugene and Springfield end their contracts with the AI license plate reading company Flock.
And in local news, Multnomah County Preschool for All will nearly double the amount of free seats it offers next year.
Mm-hmm. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 12, 2025. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm John Nelson.
And I'm Sam Bowman. The state of Washington has declared a state of emergency after the recent atmospheric river caused devastating floods. Northwest Washington is currently under flood warnings, forcing thousands to evacuate. About 100,000 people living in the 100-year-old Skagit River floodplain were told to leave now in a county order on Thursday. Warnings will stay in place through Saturday in some parts of the state. There are currently no reported fatalities. Helicopters rescued two families on Thursday from the roofs of properties in Sumas that had been flooded by 15 feet of water. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson said that the Skagit River was expecting to crest early this morning and throughout today. The river passed 37 feet overnight last night. The threshold for a flood event is 28 feet. Many arterial roads were blocked in the region, including large parts of State Route 40. A landslide blocked Interstate 90 east of Seattle. The river's level is slowly dropping now, although the risk of mudslides still remains. In addition to the Skagit River, several other rivers saw record crests, including the Snohomish River, the Cedar River, the Nooksack River, and the Grays River. Although the rain has receded, major to catastrophic flooding is likely to continue for several hours across portions of western Washington and northwestern Oregon. The floods are a brutal blow to the region, which is still recovering from the heavy floods of 2021. The frequency of record-breaking flooding continues to grow in the Northwest.
Eugene and Springfield ended their contracts with Flock Safety after a camera turned on by itself during a citywide pause Tuesday. Eugene Police installed 60 Flock cameras in May with a 2-year contract with the company. The cameras use AI to collect license plate information and physical characteristics of vehicles like color, make, and model. The contract was abruptly ended after the Eugene Police Department turned off their cameras in October, and a camera inadvertently was turned on this week. The camera was turned on and rebooted after an error message that there is no indication that the resulting data was used by law enforcement. Flock cameras have been linked to ICE arrests since the data is openly available to all law enforcement bodies. Eugene Police Chief Chris Skinner said, quote, "That vulnerability of a camera inadvertently turning on, I think, is contrary to what council has directed me to do and what some members in this community have hoped would happen. Until I can say 100% beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's not going to ever happen again, I needed to make a tough decision." Unquote. Skinner also said this does not represent a shift away from automatic license plate reading or ALPR itself, and that once the relationship with this vendor is resolved, he may come back with another proposal. Springfield cut off their Flock contract too, but say they'll look for another ALPR contractor. Activist group Eyes Off Eugene Springfield, formed to push back against the use of Flock cameras, said that although they are with Eugene and Springfield's decisions to end their Flock contracts, there is still work to be done. They said in a statement, quote, "With the cancellation of each police department's contract, we have achieved one of our organization's major goals, to defend public safety from a flawed and intrusive system," end quote. The group is calling on the Lane County Sheriff's Department to end their contract with Flock as well.
Unionized nurses at Legacy Emmanuel Hospital are raising alarm bells about how ICE agents are being allowed to act in the hospital. The Oregon Nurses Association published a letter to the hospital administration this week, saying ICE's presence at the hospital violates ethics rules they swore to uphold. According to the nurses, ICE agents frequently bring people they've detained who've been injured in violent arrests, including people with broken bones or glass in their eyes from ICE bashing in their car windows. The nurses say they worry the hospital is violating HIPAA privacy rules as well, because ICE agents have been allowed to stay in the room for private clinical conversations and treatments of sensitive areas. Anonymous sources told the Portland Mercury that agents stopped a nurse from putting an IV in a patient's arm, that they shackled a man to a bed when he posed no threat, and that they took a patient out of their care before they were ready to be discharged. Advocates also worry about the chilling effect on the broader community. They ask, if ICE is regularly present at the hospital, will immigrant communities feel safe enough to get necessary care? For their part, the hospital system says there hasn't been an increase in law enforcement in their facilities and that staff can file internal complaints if they have issues. That's Legacy Emanuel.
Gray whales off the West Coast are having a rough go of it with low birth rates, some of that due to climate change. But climate change could also provide new feeding opportunities for the whales if they can adapt. KBOO's Kara Hamilton has more on the story.
New research says birth rates for gray whales are still low, likely due to climate change affecting their food sources. However, melting sea ice has created new feeding opportunities, and scientists are hopeful the whales can adapt, allowing populations to rebound. Gray whales are known to have what are called unusual mortality events. Many whales die at once, followed by an uptick in their populations. But researcher Sue Moore at the University of Washington says the whales don't seem to be recovering from their latest mortality event that started in 2019.
Why we're concerned now is we are having an unusual mortality event, because after a brief looking recovery, bang, the numbers of stranded whales went up, the estimate went down. Maybe this UME is not over. This is something different.
Moore adds that with a loss of sea ice in Alaska, more warm water is now passing through the Bering Strait. It brings with it nutrients and new prey for the whales, who feed by filtering tiny shrimp and other animals from the ocean floor. She says the whales are known to be highly adaptable feeders, and it's possible this trait will help them survive a rapidly changing climate. Most of the gray whales off the West Coast spend their lives migrating between the food-rich waters of Alaska and the warmer waters of Baja, Mexico, about a 12,000-mile migration. Moore explains the population count happens in California, and since there have been many reports of gray whales feeding in areas outside their traditional feeding zones, it is difficult to know if the counts are still accurate.
If we're in sort of a new ecological situation for gray whales, and perhaps the entire herd no longer undertakes the full migration, then are you missing a significant number?
Moore says the next step is a workshop to bring together scientists who study gray whales from all points along their migration route, Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, to get a better picture of what the whales are doing now. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Cara Hamilton.
Multnomah County will nearly double the amount of free preschool seats it offers to residents next school year. The Preschool for All program was passed by voters in 2020, and the first seats opened up in 2022. Currently, the program offers around 3,800 seats. Next year, the county projects they can offer 7,400. That's a big deal, especially because critics have said the program hasn't spent the money it's brought in fast enough. The Preschool for All program has a goal of offering universal preschool, regardless of income, to all Multnomah County kids by 2030. The next year's projections surpass what the program needs to stay on track. That goal of universal preschool could come sooner than expected, with the birth rate in Multnomah slightly lower than originally expected. Preschool for All is funded by a 1.5% tax on people's income who make more than $125,000 a year, and there's another percent and a half levied on those who make over $250,000. New seats are also welcome news for the small businesses that offer the seats. The cost of childcare has become a significant burden for families. The county says the program saves families over $18,000 per child per year.
Despite being Republican-dominated, the Indiana Senate voted 31-19 to reject a redrawing of the state's congressional maps. 21 Republicans joined all 10 Democratic senators to block the redistricting plan. Indiana becomes the first Republican-led state legislature to vote down Trump's desire to create more GOP-friendly congressional seats. His actions are an attempt to improve the party's chances of keeping its slim U.S. House majority following the 2026 midterm elections. The Indiana House already approved the new maps drawn up by the National Republican Redistricting Trust with a goal of producing a 9-0 Republican delegation. This came from carving up two districts currently held by Democratic representatives in the area along Lake Michigan near Chicago. Trump was calling individual senators this week seeking support and went to social media Wednesday night to gripe about Indiana Republicans who weren't following his demands. Senator Sue Glick, a Republican, said she believed the pressure and threats from D.C. backfired. Glick said, quote, "You have to know Hoosiers. We can't be bullied. We don't want that. And the instant reaction is we dig in our heels and say why," end quote. Trump started the national redistricting fight by pressuring Texas Republicans to redraw its congressional map this summer, followed by Republican redistricting moves in Missouri, Ohio, and North Carolina. Democrats responded with their own redistricting proposal in California and possible moves in Illinois and Virginia.
The United States Senate has failed to extend Affordable Care Act subsidies, all but ensuring higher premiums in January. And as we just heard, Indiana lawmakers vote not to change their congressional map. And West Virginia clergy have called for a moratorium on immigration detentions during the holidays. With those stories and more, it's Catherine Carley with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There's nobody who's saying health care in America is terrific, but Republicans today have taken a system that's already struggling and broken it down even more.
Democratic Georgia Senator Raphael Warnock says more than a million people in his state alone will see their health care premiums skyrocket next month after the Senate failed to extend Affordable Care Act subsidies. Four Republicans joined Democrats in voting to renew the tax credits for 3 years, but most agreed they're too expensive. A GOP plan to create health savings accounts was also voted down. Democrats note three-quarters of the folks using the subsidies, often farmers, ranchers, or small business owners, live in red states. House lawmakers have voted to reinstate collective bargaining rights for workers at more than two dozen federal agencies. At least 22 Republicans broke with their party to overturn a presidential executive order placing restrictions on public sector unions. Indiana state senators narrowly voted against redrawing the state's congressional map ahead of next year's midterms. Republican Ron Alting voted yes, but says a White House pressure campaign may have backfired.
Hoosiers got great values, and the threats and all that to my colleagues on the other side has been nothing but making dig in even stronger.
Missouri election officials are moving ahead with a new map there in spite of a possible referendum. A grassroots coalition opposing what it calls a partisan power grab has turned in more than 300,000 signatures to get a repeal on the next ballot. Richard Von Glahn with the group People Not Politicians Missouri says the gerrymander is very unpopular.
This work has been done by over 2,000 Missourians who volunteered their time to get trained on how to gather signatures and to go out and talk to Missourians from all across the state.
Testifying to a House committee, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem defended sending more than 100 people to a notorious Salvadorian mega prison. But a federal judge has ordered the release of Maryland resident Kilmar Obrego Garcia, who was deported there before being returned to the U.S. And clergy in West Virginia are asking the governor to issue a holiday moratorium on detentions of undocumented migrants. Clarksburg Catholic priest Paul Hudock says hundreds of men taken from their families means real personal and financial stress.
These men who are typically breadwinners are taken out of their homes. Usually they have wives, partners, families.
And finally, a grand jury has again declined to indict New York Attorney General Letitia James for mortgage fraud. It's the latest setback for prosecutors aiming to revive cases against President Donald Trump's adversaries. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali, then at 7, Once Upon a Time. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 49 degrees, and tomorrow those clouds continue with a high of 54. Today in history, in 1870, Joseph H. Rainey of South Carolina became the first black person to serve in the U.S. House of Representatives. The quote of the day is from American abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison, who said, quote, "With reasonable men I will reason, with humane men I will plead, but to tyrants I will give no quarter nor waste arguments where they will certainly be lost."
Federal officials have charged a Tucson resident with stealing archaeological artifacts from the Gila River Indian community. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. A Tucson man is facing federal charges for allegedly excavating and trafficking archaeological resources from the Gila River Indian community. The U.S. Attorney's Office says 46-year-old Leo Reynoso stands accused of violating the Archaeological Resources Protection Act. Prosecutors say Reynoso allegedly removed several artifacts from the community without authorization. This included jewelry, Indian trader tokens, crucifixes, and buttons from archaeological sites on tribal land. He also stands accused of selling these items without a permit. The archaeological value of the items is estimated at $29,000, while the cost of repairing the archaeological sites is estimated at $23,000. If convicted, Reynoso faces a $20,000 fine and could get up to 2 years in prison. December 29th will mark the 130th anniversary of the Wounded Knee Massacre. In the second half of a two-part story, KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio shares some Native reactions to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's assertion that the soldiers who took part in the violent and tragic incident deserve their medals of honor.
David Martinez is Akamel Otham, founder and director of ASU's Institute for Transborder Indigenous Nations.
Wherever you see America invading, sending troops, trying to intimidate, all that comes from America's original attitude towards the so-called frontier, which was regarded as wild, which was regarded as dangerous, which was regarded as full of savages.
From the Utes across modern-day Utah and Colorado to the Apaches in Arizona and New Mexico, the Army fought over a dozen conflicts, predating federal recognition of tribal governments.
There is not a tribe anywhere in North America that did not experience deep historic trauma.
Even the Bureau of Indian Affairs emerged in 1824 from within the original War Department. 2 centuries later, Martinez suggests it's fitting that Trump has restored the agency's old moniker.
Well, for me, the Department of War is the true name because from my point of view as an indigenous person, the objective in America's conquest of Indian country was to make Indian country like America. It did so at the expense of Indian land and people. And so the reservation system that we see around us today, which includes my people, Akimala of them, is a product of war.
Lakota attorney Chase Iron Eyes calls the reservations prison camps.
There are those of us who never perceived an end of war. If you look at what the reservation system is, it's not peace, prosperity, and privilege for Native people. It's a little open-air prison camp.
For Iron Eyes, who runs the Lakota People's Law Project, Wounded Knee is deeply personal.
As the great-great-grandson of people who were killed at Wounded Knee, nobody in their right mind takes pride in the slaughtering of non-combatants, women and children.
Marla's afraid of Hawk grew up hearing horror stories from her grandfather, Richard, who was only 13 when he survived Wounded Knee. The 68-year-old Oglala Lakota elder insists Hegseth is wrong.
He's in denial. Look it up, but he's not going to.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
The American Civil Liberties Union of Illinois has spent the year challenging multiple Trump administration policies with lawsuits over warrantless immigration arrests, abusive treatment during Operation Midway Blitz, and poor conditions at a local ICE detention center. It also pursued cases involving transgender employee rights and efforts to dismantle Head Start, emphasizing that litigation works alongside public action to safeguard civil rights. Judith Ruiz Branch has more.
This year, the ACLU has filed more than 200 challenges nationwide to federal orders that it says violate constitutional rights. At the ACLU of Illinois, Adyanka says most recent local litigation has centered on warrantless immigration arrests and the inhumane treatment of immigrants, journalists, and protesters during the targeted federal action known as Operation Midway Blitz. Adyanka says a class action lawsuit aims to improve what he describes as horrific conditions at the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Detention Center in Broadview.
There's no question that the level of attacks on basic rights and the way in which those attacks have sought to dismantle fundamental government structures and protections have been particularly acute during this time.
He stresses that while the ACLU has filed lawsuits against every presidential administration since its founding in 1920, the current administration has kept their office particularly busy this year. Yanka says they also took legal action on behalf of a transgender federal employee working for the Illinois National Guard who was denied access to appropriate restroom facilities despite state law requiring it. And they oppose the administration's efforts to dismantle the Head Start program, which Yanka calls the most successful pre-K education program in the nation's history.
The administration has attempted to do this not only by cutting staff and cutting access to resources, but also by trying to limit access to programs on the basis of the communities that they serve.
As concerns increase about whether the nation's legal system is holding up under pressure, Yanka is confident the lower level courts are functioning as designed and federal courts are holding the government accountable. But he emphasizes litigation is only part of a larger collective effort.
What we're seeing around polling, the numbers of people who came out for the No Kings rallies, the number of people who come out to protest on any given weekend over any given set of issues, all of those are sort of indications that it's working.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
Chronic pain is debilitating and can affect professional and personal interactions for many Hoosiers. Traditional solutions may help, but finding the cause could be in an unlikely place. Terry D. has more in Indiana.
Chronic pain is discomfort that persists for more than 3 months and affects millions of Americans. In Indiana, chronic pain prevalence increases as urbanization decreases, with higher rates in non-metropolitan areas, according to the CDC. A new report offers an alternative to traditional treatment, neuroplastic recovery therapy. President of the Association for the Treatment of Neuroplastic Symptoms, Dr. Dave Clark, says most people assume that pain and various forms of illness are caused by injury or disease. Another part of the body, he explains, could hold the answer.
There's a whole other category where pain can be generated by the brain. And that turns out to be responsible for symptoms in at least a quarter of the population and 40% of people who go to the doctor.
Neuroplastic symptoms are generated due to changes in the brain's nerve pathways, Clark adds, and are linked to stress, trauma, emotions, and other life challenges. The association's report indicates there is a tendency to have more than one symptom at a time. He notes symptoms can show up as migraines, ear ringing, dizziness, visual disturbances, spine pain, or irritable bowel syndrome. Extreme cases could appear as pseudo-seizures or nerve problems. Neuroplastic recovery therapy is a form of talk therapy that has two objectives: to alleviate symptoms, not just to help people live with them, and to shift attention from physical symptoms to what is going on in the brain. Clark says people should consider what is going on in their lives as these experiences may be manifesting as symptoms because the brain is in a state of distress.
Many of my patients, for example, have had a great deal of anger or fear or shame, grief or guilt that they're not fully aware of. So we try to help people connect with those emotions and put them into words.
Clark has seen patients improve, which he believes is an incentive for them to work towards recovery. Some medical schools are familiar with the therapy, but it is not part of their formal curriculum. I'm Terry D. reporting.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Donate now or the year will not end. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Cara Hamilton, Josh Salem, and Lizard. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Jasmine Moss. Special thanks to Brian Bull, Catherine Carley, Judith Ruiz Branch, Terry D., and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm John Nelson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.